You flick a switch, and the lights come on. The microwave starts, the computer boots up. But apart from knowing that, yes, there's some power plants around burning various things to generate juice, how does this all happen? This man has something to do with it.
Yeah, my name is Dennis Mullen. I'm the system operations manager at the Electric System Control Center.
Mullen is basically in charge of an air traffic control center, but for electricity. The state's biggest utility, Public Service of New Hampshire, runs it. The control room itself is an unmarked bunker-like building nestled somewhere in New Hampshire. Exactly where is not public information. A lot of people would lose power if it were knocked out. It pretty much looks exactly how you're imagining it. One whole wall is a computer display of an engineer's diagram of transmission lines. There are four workstations, each with a semicircle of six monitors where dispatchers control the flow of power. In New Hampshire, about a third of the state's power comes from nuclear, a third from natural gas, hydro, oil, and coal get about 11 to 13% apiece, and 4.5% is from other renewables.
The power will flow by the laws of physics. So we won't necessarily route the power. It goes to the load. And it's like water flowing downhill to the lowest point.
The water metaphor is an apt one. Probably the easiest way to imagine our electrical grid is a series of canals of varying sizes flowing into pools. The pools are cities, towns, and industrial consumers. The canals are power lines. The job of Mullen and his team is basically to open and close the proper floodgates and sluiceways to make sure there isn't so much juice flowing that it's overwhelming any of the lines. And they do it 24/7. 365. It's impossible to know where any one electron goes, but in general, it will flow along the path of least resistance, filling the pools closest to the opening of its channel before flowing to more distant load. It's about 3:30 on a January afternoon, and while I watch, the icon for a power plant starts to flash. Schiller Station in Portsmouth is coming online and asking to be patched into the grid.
It's a coal-fired unit that happens to be coming on as we're coming into the evening. Now, by the time you get this recorded and cut and pasted, the market-sensitive information that we've just discussed is passed.
How is a power plant turning on market-sensitive information? To understand that, you first have to understand that grids across the country are engaged in an experiment in deregulation. Prior to 2001, New Hampshire utilities built power lines, supplied electricity, and simply passed along the cost to consumers. But all that changed a little more than a decade ago, as New England states chose to deregulate, meaning that utilities had to sell their power plants and just be in charge of operating the power lines.
And that's driven massive change.
Gordon Van Wiley is the president and CEO of the New England Independent System Operator, or ISO, a not-for-profit established to ensure that there's always enough electricity for what's needed.
I mean, we've gone from having to operate and dispatch just 300-plus assets a decade ago to thousands of assets today.
Basically, opening the market to competition has meant more players have gotten into the electricity game. It's also made the market a lot more sensitive to fluctuations in the price of fuel. That has flipped some of the basic assumptions about how power is produced, like coal plants are for, quote, base load and natural gas is turned on and off.
You know, the concept of base load, intermediate, and peak is very much sort of an old world theme, but that paradigm has shifted as well. So now you're having what would have been regarded as intermediate units, the gas-fired generators, becoming base load.
This is the story that's playing out in slow motion all over New England. Gas is so cheap, it's getting hard for oil and coal plants to compete. Some oil and coal plants run so infrequently, it's hard for them to stay in business. Last year, such plants accounted for less than 4% of the New England energy mix, while natural gas exceeded 50%. In the deregulated market, electricity is sold by so-called merchant plants, who submit their prices, blind to what other generators are bidding, and the ISO selects the lowest bids to generate the power needed. Which is why everything that goes on in the control bunker somewhere in New Hampshire is on a strictly need-to-know basis.
No, you can't take any pictures.
Oh, I can't?
No.
I'm just kidding.
Only because this is confidential information. If a generator, it's like the stock market, if a generator knew that a particular transmission asset was out of service, it would influence their bid. They would know that a path is blocked or not, from Maine to New Hampshire. The guys in New Hampshire would jack up their price, or Connecticut, Mass, jack up their price because they know that the power's not going to get out of Maine today.
Those who pushed for deregulation more than a decade ago say that without that competition, utilities wouldn't have the same profit motive to quickly build new plants and shift generation away from more expensive fuels.
Well, remember, people do have competitive options now.
State Senator Jeb Bradley was a champion of deregulation. He says, thanks to this policy, consumers can switch from their utility to a supplier that's taking better advantage of low fuel prices.
Deregulation has worked. People do have options, and they have opportunities to save. But, like anything else, you have to avail yourself of those opportunities.
But letting the market decide everything has its downsides, says Gary Long, president of Public Service of New Hampshire, which is the one utility that was allowed to hold on to its power plants.
The market has a short-term focus. In other words, it's focused on what are the economics now, today, the next day. So if you're building a plant that's going to last 40, 50 years, and the market only kind of tells you what you can expect in the next day or the next year at best, it makes for a very difficult decisional process for people who make investment in power plants.
According to Long, the market says, today, gas is cheap. Let's build gas plants. Long and others in the energy world are already concerned that the New England region is becoming too reliant on natural gas. And the outlook isn't getting any better. 52% of the proposed new plants for the region are gas plants. That also troubles ISO New England's Van Wiley.
The gas generators are relying on a just-in-time fuel supply. So in the old world, you could always count on a generator to have a local fuel supply, right? Pile of coal or a tank of oil or something like that. So that all works while we had some surplus capacity on the gas transmission pipelines coming into the region.
There are 5 gas pipelines feeding New England, and on hot summer days when ACs are cranking, they are all pretty much full. Which brings us to the big question. How long can natural gas prices stay low? Some worry that it will be just long enough to force coal and oil-burning plants to shutter and build up lots of gas pipelines before bouncing back again. That's why Gary Long says PSNH doesn't want to shut down its old coal plants, like Merrimack and Schiller stations.
I tell people publicly that I actually think New Hampshire and PSNH is actually the best situated energy company, electricity company in all of New England.
Long says PSNH has no plans to shut down its coal-burning plants, even 15 years out. For those who are concerned about climate change, this begs the question, what could or should be done to wean the power supply off carbon? That's what we'll look at tomorrow, what to do about CO2. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.